Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth Podcast. The always look on the bright side of life edition. As we move on from the season opening loss to the Chargers and look ahead to Thursday's primetime game against Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. Coming up, Dave Lapham joins me to look at several key topics going into the game, including who was really to blame for Joe Mixon's costly fumble last week. This week's one-on-one conversation is with wide receiver Mike Thomas, who tells us what Joe Burrow showed him on the final drive last Sunday and how excited he was to see A.J. Green back in action. And finally, it's our Know the Foe segment as we get the scoop on the Browns from one of the best radio play-by-play men in the NFL, Cleveland's Jim Donovan. The Bengals Booth Podcast is presented by Prime Sport, the official hospitality partner of the Cincinnati Bengals. And here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest thing since heirloom framing. The next time you see me doing a Zoom call from my family room for the Bengals or for the NFL Network, you'll see a beautifully framed Boomer Esiason jersey over my shoulder. It's the work of Heirloom Framing in Fairfield, known as America's Jersey Framer, and for good reason. They do amazing work, and pro athletes from all over the country send jerseys there to be framed. So check out Heirloom Framing on Facebook or Instagram, or better yet, visit their store in Fairfield. It's like a trip to a Sports Hall of Fame. Now, let's get to football. For the final 3 minutes and 8 seconds last Sunday, Joe Burrow lived up to all the hype as he led the Bengals down the field on what should have been a game-winning or at least game-tying drive. A questionable call and a terrible kick spoiled the Hollywood ending. But overall, Joe's stats were only so-so. He went 23 for 36, completing 64% of his passes, for 193 yards, no touchdowns, and one interception. His passer rating of 66.1 is ranked 30th among NFL quarterbacks after week one, one spot ahead of Cleveland's Baker Mayfield. And that's where I start with my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. Time to go back and look at last week's game for Joe Burrow, his NFL debut. As we mentioned earlier, a passer rating of 66.1. If you are not a fan of that stat and prefer ESPN's quarterback rating statistic, he checked in at 20.1. That was ranked 30th of the 32 NFL quarterbacks in week one. Pressure was a problem, pressured on 39% of his dropbacks. He was 3 for 10 when under pressure last week. He was also 0 for 5 in the game on throws of 20 or more yards down the field. If it makes you feel any better, Patrick Mahomes was 0 for 2 last week on throws of 20 or more yards down the field. In any case, after reviewing the film, what did Joe Burrow think of his week one performance?
In my eyes, I played terrible through 3.5 quarters, and then I played up to my standards in the last drive and almost won the game. So I just have to, I know I'll be ready for it, and I just have to keep that same mindset I had in the 2-minute drill to kind of bring that along the rest of the season.
Can you imagine how people would view that game if that touchdown pass to A.J. Green was not overturned?
Well, I know his quarterback rating wouldn't have been 66.1. I mean, he would have been probably in the 80s somewhere. And if you didn't, the bonehead play was a rookie mistake to throw backhand that, he is so composed and so intelligent. I don't look at him as the young quarterback, the rookie quarterback, and that's probably not fair because he is, but he is so much more than that with his mindset toward the game of football. And when he threw that backhanded interception on the screen pass, he came walking off the football field, I heard, just saying, muttering to himself, "Joe, tuck it and run the football, run the football." Wasn't going nuts, disconsolate or whatever. And he just realized, okay, move on. And he did. So, did he have some plays that he'd like to have back? Sure. But, man, you're right, Dan. If they had let that touchdown stand, the legend of Joe Burrow would have grown exponentially as a come-from-behind last second win in his first NFL game at home for the Cincinnati Bengals? Are you kidding me? It would have been storybook. Would have been made for TV movie, but it didn't happen.
He had 8 rushing attempts. Now, those were not necessarily called runs, except for the quarterback draw that went for the touchdown. But can Joe be running that much and make it through a season without having to miss time?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, he's the second leading rusher, and second in carries and second in rushes. Giovanni Bernard had 1 carry for 7 yards. Yeah, you can't make Joe Burrow run around trying to create and extend plays all the time. And in the first half of the football game, it was happening way too much. So I do think that Joe Burrow, though, shows good athleticism. I mean, he's got some short space quickness. He's got some quick twitch. When he gets out full stride, he's got plenty of speed, plenty of foot speed. But I would not bank on, having 11-on-11 football with Joe Burrow doing zone reads and speed options and things of that nature. I wouldn't have that a big part of my offense. He's not built. Not many quarterbacks are, but he's not built that way.
In a span of 3 snaps in the third quarter, he just barely missed a 35-yard touchdown pass to John Ross in the back of the end zone. And then the 31-yard attempt to A.J. Green, where it was just a terrible throw. But after he went back and looked at the first throw, how bad was that throw to John Ross, if bad at all?
I don't see much wrong with it. And he said, being the quarterback that he is, he understands that you accept all the blame and deflect all the credit. So he said, I got to put it on John's chest. Pretty close. It wasn't that far off. It was a pretty good throw. And I still, I'm still trying to figure out, what John's problem was with it, because he never really extended for the football. It's just short on that ball. I'm not sure he found it. I'm not sure he tracked it well enough. And on the one that he bobbled on the sideline, didn't look it in. The simple thing. It's receiver 101. Look the football in to your hands. Don't take your eyes off the football too soon. And he did.
Do you think the missed deep ball to A.J. Green had anything to do with the limited number of training camp snaps that those two guys had together?
I don't know. I think Joe said it best. He goes, a high school quarterback has to put that ball on him. And he's right. That was his worst throw of the night. And there's no question about it. And you have some. Because, other plays that require a little bit more timing than that were very true and right on the money, But the thing that the 0-for-5 on balls over 20 yards at training camp and at LSU, that was his forte, getting the ball with such good touch and the perfect trajectory to the second and third level of the defenses. And that let him down a little bit in his opener against the Chargers.
The biggest shocker last week was obviously the missed 31-yard field goal that would have forced overtime by Randy Bullock. But the second biggest shocker was a rare fumble by Joe Mixon, his first since his rookie year. He entered the game last week with a streak of 524 consecutive carries without a fumble and then coughed up the ball in the fourth quarter, helping the Chargers come from behind and win the game. So how many times has Joe Mixon gone back and watched that fumble?
Man, honestly, I probably watched it about like 50 times. I'm going to be totally honest with you. I just kept looking and diagnosing, how did this happen? It was just crazy to me. I mean, the guy, he made a great, great play, but that's definitely inexcusable. And like I said, I watched it 50 times and, all walkthrough and everything that we just did and, stuff like that. I mean, I'm holding the ball, making a move and just have it high and tight, covering it, at any point of contact. And like I said, I'm definitely going to build on it. And, like I said, I just got to keep on, working at it.
50
yards? 50. It was a lot of times where I played it back. Even when my coach showed me, I don't like looking at it, but I run that back one more time. Run one more time. Different angle, different angle. And I mean, it sucks, but at the same time, you have to you, no matter how bad it is, you have to learn from it, and you have to, you know, just keep looking to get better and see how you could attack differently and how you could have held the ball or made a move off of it. And these are things that I'm looking and assessing in my head of what can I've done in that situation. I mean, of course, you can always say, oh, just put the ball away. I mean, the ball, it was in great position. It got a little low, but it was still in great position. But like I said, the guy, he made a hell of a play, but it was never supposed to happen. But, I mean, at the end of the day, like I said, I learned from it. And come Thursday, like I said, I'm going to be ready.
Denzel Perryman did make a great play in forcing the fumble, but it all started when Bobby Hart's man beat him inside, prevented Trey Hopkins from getting where he was supposed to be to block the guy who eventually forced the fumble.
Exactly. There's always a trickle-down, a ripple effect, and penetration was the key ingredient to the problem with Joe Mixon. So ultimately, the fumble falls on him. Perryman made a great hit, put his helmet right on the football, but Perryman got in position because Trey Hopkins got picked. You know, he got picked trying to pull the center around to block him, and he was delayed getting there, late getting there. Perryman beat him, made the play. So there's always reasons for the outcome, and it's never, ever, never just one guy in the game of football when it's 11 on 11. There's so many guys involved. Everybody has to do their job properly, and nobody feels worse about that play than Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon's first career 100-yard rushing game was against Cleveland, though, and his career high, 162 yards rushing, came last year in the home finale when he 26 carries, 162 yards, 6.2 average, 41-yard long, 2 touchdowns he rushed for. And in that game, Chubb went into the game leading the NFL in rushing. And the Bengals shut him down. 13 attempts, 41 yards, 3.2 a lug. His longest carry was 8 yards. He loses the rushing title to Henry. So, Dan, in my mind, if I'm an offensive lineman, you're trying to hang your hat on things, a rushing title by your running back is a big thing to hang your hat on and to give him that reward. The fact that we didn't do that, I think it's going to play into tomorrow night a little bit. I think the running game is going to be massive because – Cleveland ran the ball in the early stages against Baltimore well. The game got out of hand. They got away from it. I mean, the two running backs are good. Chubb and Hunt are good. Hunt was averaging, and he got 60 yards on 10 lugs. And Chubb ran the ball effectively, too. Baker Mayfield, though, played poorly. They fell behind. They had to try to throw to catch up, and he wasn't up to it. But if they feel like if they can run the ball, pound the ball in the Bengals' defense, and control the pace and tone of the game that way, Dan, I think they're going to do it because right now they have a quarterback that's struggling. There's an old axiom for quarterbacks. See it, believe it, let it rip. He thinks he maybe sees it, but then he's not sure he really sees it, and then he's holding it. I mean, he's had people to throw to, and he's trying to find something bigger and better to throw to. And he's struggling. He's second-guessing everything. He doesn't trust the system. He doesn't believe in it yet. So I think Stefanski's going to be like, okay, Baker, until you start executing the way you're supposed to execute, we're going to ground and pound, and that's what we're going to do.
You mentioned that Kareem Hunt had a good game as well as Nick Chubb in week one. 13 carries, 72 yards for Kareem Hunt, so that's 5.5 yards a carry. He also had 4 receptions, so he got the ball 17 times. Nick Chubb got it 11.
And he got the contract. You know, he got a new contract, $6.5 million. So, I mean, he's going to be available to him every game this season. There's no suspension, no anything like that to deal with. And the thing is, last week, the Bengals went against 5 Pro Bowl players that the L.A. Chargers had defensively, both their defensive ends, their nose tackle, Linval Joseph, and both corners. So they had rush guys and corners. This football team has 5 Pro Bowlers, both of their running backs, both of their receivers, and Joel Bitonio in the offensive line. So it stands to reason. I mean, the challenge was on the Bengals' offense last week, and they didn't quite, you know, meet it. Will the Bengals' defense be able to shut down this Pro Bowl-laden offensive group that didn't play well And a lot of it falls on Baker Mayfield, really, against Baltimore.
Baker Mayfield getting ready to make his fifth career start against the Bengals. He beat them the first three times the two teams played, but the Bengals finally savored a victory over Baker Mayfield in the season finale as they came up with three of the 21 interceptions that Baker Mayfield had last season.
Back to throw. His pass picked off by Darius Phillips. Yeah. He's on his feet at the 20, the 15, the 10, the 5. He dives and goes down at the 3-yard line. On third down and 16, Mayfield back to throw. Has time. He's going to fire high and deep for Odell Beckham Jr.
Nice.
It's intercepted again by Darius Phillips. Mayfield back to throw. Here comes Dunlap. He's picked up. Mayfield now pump fakes. Was he past the line as he throws? Intercepted by B.W. Webb at the 13-yard line. And he goes down inbounds with the Bengals' third interception of Baker Mayfield today and their fifth this season.
How about that?
So, Baker Mayfield, 5 picks in 2 games against the Bengals last year. But consider this, Lap. As I mentioned, he's 3-1. His record as a starting quarterback against the Bengals. Against the rest of the NFL, 9-17. So there's one team that Baker has done better against than anybody else.
And, you know, there was the Hugh Jackson factor. Baker Mayfield just could not accept the fact that Hugh Jackson was with the Cincinnati Bengals after he was a head coach with the Cleveland Browns. He looked at him as Benedict Arnold. I mean, it was like the biggest. And I think it really elevated, you know, his whole approach to the game. So I think the fact that it's a different coaching staff may be a little bit of a plus. But, Dan, if they don't get him out of pocket a ton, I think one of the big things in this football game is being able to control and contain those bootlegs, because him standing in the pocket, he's getting a bunch of balls tipped. He can't see. They list him at 6 feet. I'm not sure.
Maybe they list him at 6'1".
Yeah, 6'1" put him in a stretcher. I mean, I'm not sure about that. But he just has real pressure in his face is going to be a big thing. Who can get the push? And if Geno Atkins were in the game, just pushing Betonio and his offensive lineman just back in his face, so he can't see the second between the second and third level. He just can't see it well enough. I think that I think they're going to change the launch point quite a bit. It would not stun me whatsoever. I think they're going to try to run the heck out of the football, play action pass, get him out of pocket. Bootlegs, naked bootlegs, I think that's going to be a big, big part of what we see tomorrow night.
I had a thought going into this game relating to Joe Burrow and the word swagger. I think we might have talked about this on last week's show. He's got it. His teammates talk about it. But he doesn't seem to like that word. He prefers earned confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think about Baker Mayfield. And I don't think Burrow is specifically applying this to Baker Mayfield like I'm about to. But maybe that's the type of swagger that he doesn't want to be associated with. More cockiness, more taunting.
There's nothing wrong with thinking, like my mother used to say, there's nothing wrong with thinking that, you can do something. You just don't have to tell everybody else. They don't have to all know. And that's very true. You can have an inner confidence, and it doesn't have to be, you know, something that you wear like a uniform. And then people, I think, will respond to it. Baker Mayfield, look at all the national ads he's got. And that kind of grinds on his teammates, I think, a little bit too. And Joe Burrow, you don't see any of that. Joe Burrow's all about football right now. I mean,
you know he's had offers.
Sure, absolutely. And Peyton Manning was the same way. I mean, Peyton Manning never really got into the big commercial stuff until the end of his career, and even more out, you know, once he retired, once he was out of football. Because when he was playing football, it was all football all the time. And I think that's the same way that Joe Burrow approaches it. Baker Mayfield, he might have, you know, I got a lot going on. I got to do this. I got to go do this shoot. I really can't throw with you guys today. I've got to shoot another commercial with State Farm.
Let's hear from Bengals safety Jesse Bates on Baker Mayfield.
You know, he's very swaggy and confident type of guy. You hate to be playing against him. You love him if he was on his team. So, yeah, I feel like there's always that chippy type of game when we're playing against, you know, Baker and those guys, just because, I mean, they have swag and they have a lot of confidence in themselves, which is fine. And I'm sure they're going to have to have a lot to prove after getting whooped the other night as well.
You know what I noticed I still have at my house? Last year's Sports Illustrated cover.
Oh, do you?
With Cleveland on the cover as the team to beat.
They were ordained.
Possible Super Bowl team last year. Not so much.
I'm telling you, boy, when that's the most dangerous thing in the world, when you are ordained for no apparent reason. You're just the hot pick. You know, it's like, on paper, you should be this. Well, on paper is toilet paper. It really doesn't hold up. You know, I mean, it's you got to go out and prove it. This Dan, though, is going to be, I think, a very, very physical football game, because I think the Bengals feel a sense of urgency, and Cleveland definitely does. If they fall to 0-2 in the division and lose one on the road and lose one at home in your first two games, man, I mean, talk about doldrums. The fan base up there is going to be, oh, here we go again. The Bengals, I think, realize they're going to be facing an opponent that has a tremendous sense of urgency with respect to this football game.
Last year, the number one team in the NFL in defense in terms of points allowed was the Patriots. The Patriots only gave up 14.1 points per game. Wow. That was best in the league last year by about 5 points.
Yeah.
Second best in the league, the 49ers, giving up 19 points a game. So the Bengals in week one only giving up 16 points. Obviously, if they could keep that up or anything close to it, they would be thrilled with their defensive improvement. Here's linebacker Jermaine Pratt on what he thought about the defense's performance last Sunday.
We did a huge jump, but we still got to keep on working, keep on coming together as one and fighting and scratching and calling to get the job done, getting us a team, a victory. We got to create some turnovers. We didn't have no turnovers. The Chargers had two. That's the reason they probably won the game, because they won the turnover margin. So we got to get some turnovers. We got to figure out how to create some turnovers to get Joe Burrow and them going on offense.
And that was the biggie, Lap. No takeaways for the defense last week. Only a couple of sacks. Neither of the two sacks went for a huge loss.
Right.
Didn't have a ton of pressure on Tyrod Taylor throughout.
No, it wasn't overwhelming. Two fourth down stops were big. Anytime you get fourth down stops, that's equivalent to, and a lot of coaches look at that as just like a turnover, because you get possession of the football right there. There's no kick involved. You know, you just take over. So I guess, you know, you could say defensively, they were both in the first half, and they were a big, big advantage. The best average drive start was a 38-yard line. The Chargers was the 17. 21-yard differential on the drives in the first half. Two first downs the Bengals didn't have to worry about. The Chargers did. And offensively, they did not take advantage. You know, only had 7 points on the board on the quarterback draw from Joe Burrow. And defensively, they did a good job of, you know, making the Chargers go long field with that field position and holding them to, you know, just 6 points. So it's interesting. You know, back in the day, most of the defensive coordinators that I had exposure to, 17 points was it. If you can hold a team to 17 points or fewer, that's a win in the National Football League. If you don't win that football game, it's not on the defense. And you'd have to say that the defense did enough to win that football game against the L.A. Chargers.
Jermaine Pratt led the team with a dozen tackles last week. That's a new career high for the second-year linebacker out of NC State. Who jumped out to you when you watched the defense?
I thought he did. 7 unassisted tackles, 5 assists for 12. I thought Jesse Bates did. I thought both of those guys showed great range. You know, they were covering a lot of ground out there. I thought the young linebackers, you know, played pretty well. I mean, I didn't notice any real glaring mental errors of any sort. And I thought William Jackson on the back end played well. I thought he had one of his best games that he's had, you know, in a very long time. So you have, you know, Jesse Bates, William Jackson, a couple guys in the back end. You have linebackers playing at a higher level than they did last year. And the defensive line I thought was solid. I mean, I thought Sam Hubbard was, more, you know, solid or more. You know, everybody I think did all right. There was nobody that's like, oh man, what that performance? What happened there? Nobody. I don't think anybody really had an underachieving, you know, type performance. And I think that's why, you know, they held the Chargers to 16 points.
Christian Covington was a nice surprise.
Yeah,
just picked up early in the week.
He was solid,
plugged in there, probably
doesn't even know the name of all of his teammates yet, or can't put names to faces, and he did a decent job.
He did. He flashed a couple of times. There's no question about it. He belongs. He's been in the league. You know, he's been in the league, what, 4 or 5 years? He's got some exposure. Khalid Kareem, I think, was fine as well. Daniels, I thought, was fighting the groin. You know, I thought that he was not quite as explosive and sudden, you know, as he normally is. Carl Lawson had the sack. Carl Lawson, I thought, you know, showed himself as well. A lot of guys played good, solid, sound football, and that's what you have to have.
They wound up giving up a lot of rushing yards.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel in the moment like the run defense was terrible.
Yeah, I think one got out. Eckler got out on one on a short yardage run that really hurt him. But for the most part, the fits. I agree with you. The fits weren't. It was like, oh man, what happened there? There's a cavernous, you know, somebody just hit the wrong gap. Somebody wasn't where they're supposed to be there. Every single play, everybody's not going to win their individual battle. Somebody's going to move somebody against their will as an offensive player, and there's going to be little creases and cavities that you have to deal with. It's just a matter of minimizing all that. And I thought for the most part, the Bengals minimized chunks, explosives, you know, all those things against them. Like we said earlier, Williams' 36-yard reception could have and should have been offensive pass interference. I mean, take that away. That's one of their big explosives that's off the board.
After one game, the Bengals are tied for fifth in points allowed and rank 15th in yards allowed. However, only four teams allowed more rushing yards than the 155 Cincinnati gave up against the Chargers. On the final drive of the game last week, Joe Burrow completed 8 passes, including 2 in a row late in the drive to Mike Thomas, a guy who only had 2 catches all of last year as a member of the LA Rams. I spoke to Mike this week.
Mike, your first 2 catches as a Bengal came on back-to-back plays late in the final drive against the Chargers. What did it mean to you that the coaches trusted you enough to have you in that situation and that Joe Burrow trusted you enough to throw you the ball with the game on the line?
It means a lot. We put in the work this training camp all summer, so I have, you know what I'm saying, great confidence in myself, like when I'm not getting the reps or in practice and whatever, and when it's game time, to know exactly what to do and when to do it. So I feel great that, you know what I'm saying, that they trust me. And like I said, we just put in all the work and this summer, so it just came out great.
What did you think of your rookie quarterback on that final drive?
Oh, man, he was doing great, man. We was connecting like crazy, and you know what I'm saying, the shots that he was making to get us downfield, I just knew that we was going to win that game. And just the fourth quarter comeback was crazy. I mean, I salute him because he was doing a heck of a job that last drive.
We're talking to wide receiver Mike Thomas. The Bengals ran a few plays last Sunday with 5 wide receivers on the field. College football teams do that a lot. NFL teams don't. But it sounds like the Bengals want to take advantage of all this talent in the wide receiver room.
Oh, yeah, we definitely stacked up in the receiver room, man. So it's always good to, you know, spread the guys out and try to use every weapon that we have to, you know what I'm saying, get an edge on the game. So we very stacked. And like I said, you just got to wait, you know what I'm saying, to your name call and just get in and do your job and do your works. And like I said, the work is put in. We just got to go ahead and execute.
How exciting was it for the other guys in the group to see A.J. Green back on the field?
Man, I grew up watching AJ, and I like I tell him every day, man, lead us, because, you know what I'm saying, we look up to you. Honestly, like, I used to look up to him too, you know what I'm saying, I still do. So just to have him back on the field, all healthy, it's good to watch, man. Like I said, I told him my guy is back, man. Like, if you're tired, let me know, man. I'll come get a few plays and get us going, and, you know what I'm saying, go back out there and do your thing. So, yeah, it's a great room. I'm loving the guys, feeding off the guys, so We ready.
So T. Higgins says that AJ was his hero, and it almost sounds similar for you.
Oh yeah, for sure, man. AJ is a legend, man. He knows that. We all know that, man. It's good to even learn from him, just to see how he, you know what I'm saying, react when defense is playing him, when corners is playing him in certain leverages, you know, to just always get, you know, pick his brain and see how to beat press coverage.
Zach Taylor was on the coaching staff in Los Angeles for 2 of your 4 years there. Was that a big reason why you decided to sign with Cincinnati?
Yeah, pretty much. Me and Zach always had a relationship. Like, he was in the receiver room with us at the Rams, so he pretty much know what I can do, how explosive I am. and just knowing how great of a coach Zach is and feeding off him, it was just I just felt like it was a good connection just to go ahead, come down here and help the guys win, help do what I can to, you know, get dubs.
Mike, you're playing Thursday night football this week. On the one hand, you get the national spotlight. On the other hand, it is rough physically. How do you feel about playing Thursday night games?
I feel it's like you said, it's national. It's a new thing. It's like a new Monday night. So it's like everybody's watching. So it's like you have to get prepared mentally. And, of course, the Cleveland – I mean, this whole division is stacked physically. So you just got to be ready to play physical. Be ready to shed blocks, do everything you got to do to win and beat your man in front of you and do your job. So it's a hell of a physical conference we in, but, you know, it's the game of football is physical. You can't always just play with finesse. You have to put hands on guys. So I'm looking forward to it.
A couple more questions for Mike Thomas. You went to Southern Miss. That's Hattiesburg, Mississippi. You spent the last 4 years in Los Angeles, but you're from Chicago. Does Cincinnati feel like a good Midwestern fit for you?
Oh, yeah, it gives me home vibes. It's only 4 hours from Chicago, so a lot of my family is happy that I'm back Midwest. It's definitely give me Chicago vibes. It's a little humid out here, but it'll work. You know, I just got to get readjusted because I was on the West Coast for like 4 years. So just readjusting to the Midwest, you know what I'm saying, weather, and I'm all good. I'm ready to roll.
Last thing, Mike, I see in your bio, you still hold the Illinois state record with 6 touchdown catches in a high school game. How do you catch 6 touchdown passes in a high school game?
I mean, I don't know. I just feel like I naturally connect with quarterbacks. I don't know. It's just we always find each other. We always make a way to, you know what I'm saying, show that chemistry on the field. And me and my high school quarterback, we was just locked in that week and we were just on fire. And it's like once we rolled, when we got that ball rolling, you couldn't stop it. So it just feel good to still hold that, you know what I'm saying, record. And I'm just hopefully I can stay there for forever. It's just all about quarterback connection and chemistry, man. That's how I look at it. And that's the whole reason how me and Joe got connected in that fourth quarter.
I'm not counting on 6, but I'll be wishing for a couple on Thursday night against the Browns. Best of luck. Appreciate the time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You've got to love the enthusiasm in Mike's voice while discussing A.J. Green. Now time for this week's Know the Foe segment. The Cleveland Browns opened the season with a 38-6 loss in Baltimore, and that's nothing new for Browns radio announcer Jim Donovan. In their last 16 openers, the Browns are 0-15-1. Jim joined Lapp and me on the Bengals game plan show this week, and I asked him if that 32-point loss reflected how great the Ravens are or where the Browns are at this stage under new head coach Kevin Stefanski.
Boy, you hit it right on the head, because I have to tell you, I knew, and I think everybody knew, guys, that it was going to be a difficult game. You guys know that going over to Baltimore, definitely a different, you know, scenario with no fans being there because it's one of the loudest stadiums in the NFL. But still, the opponent and the quality of the opponent, you knew that you were going to have to play very, very well to go over there and beat them. But I think a lot of people thought it would be a really competitive game, and it really wasn't a competitive game. So I don't think we really have the answer. I mean, I think it's a troubling question, though, because it has kind of implications that, boy, you know what, we may be a long way away from being able to compete with a team like the Ravens. Now, they are really good. They were very, very impressive, but they were allowed to do whatever they wanted to do, and the Browns defense had no answer at all for Lamar Jackson or the Ravens offense. And then the Browns offense really hurt themselves with mistakes, and those mistakes were just compounded into big Baltimore drives and big Baltimore plays. So I don't know. When the Browns landed and got back home to Cleveland, I'm sure they were wondering the same thing. Who are we really?
You know, Jim, when I looked at the beginning of the football game, ran the ball well, I thought, against the Ravens. Then all of a sudden, the self-destruction that you described started to take place, and Baker obviously didn't play very well and then had to get away from that running game a little bit. And I think there was probably some criticism, maybe got away from it too soon, but I thought the running game showed some definite promise against a pretty damn good defense.
Yeah, and it did. And you look at the averages, Dave. I mean, the averages by Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, they're right there. You would take those every day of the week. On the one touchdown drive that the Browns had, which ended with a David Njoku catch for a touchdown, to set that drive up and to get them down inside the red zone, there were two big chunk runs, one by Chubb, one by Hunt. And I think that is really what they're basing the offense on. That's going to be the meat and potatoes of the offense. But just like last year, when it was more all Chubb rather than Chubb and Hunt because he was out for the front part of the season, even with Freddie Kitchens last year, and it was surprising to see it happen on Sunday too, the Browns did get away from the thing that really is the staple of their offense. Now, score indicated definitely in the second half why they had to do that.
Right.
Because the game had really gotten away from them. But I do believe they got away from it too early and still when it was a game. I mean, for a long period of time, it was a 10-6 ball game. And you know, it's too bad because I think a lot of us would have liked to have seen that play out. And we hope that that isn't a bad habit that they continue to do. I don't think we felt going into the year that they were going to lose the running game at all because it was just talked about as being the staple and the strongest thing that they have.
We're talking to the radio voice of the Browns, Jim Donovan. Freddie Kitchens didn't work out. He had never been a head coach before and had only been an offensive coordinator for about half a season. Kevin Stefanski had never been a head coach before the Browns hired him this year, and he had been an offensive coordinator for about 1 year. What was the selling point for Kevin Stefanski? And I don't remember at the time, Jim, were there other names that were prominently floated as possibilities at least?
Well, I have to tell you, Dan, if you go back to when Freddie Kitchens got the job, there were two camps inside the Browns organization. There was the John Dorsey group, and there was the Paul DePodesta group.
Mm-hmm.
And as they went through at the end of that year, they, you know, the Dorsey group, led by John himself, obviously, they were all behind Freddie Kitchens. Greg Williams was immediately not going to be the choice after he had been the interim head coach after Hugh Jackson had been let go. So Kitchens was their guy. But DePodesta and his group, the analytical group that is present and still very present and very powerful now within the Browns organization, they wanted Kevin Stefanski at that time. And it came down to who was going to win out. Dorsey was the general manager at the time. So Stefanski was in fact brought in for a second interview, and then Kitchens was given the job. So when there was a rise in power and a lessening in responsibility going to be laid out to John Dorsey, and Paul DePodesta was going to really kind of run the show and certainly run the selection committee, then Stefanski, you know, came back in as a prime player. As far as other guys were concerned, I mean, it was the typical. I mean, Josh McDaniels being from the Canton area here in, you know, just south of Cleveland. I mean, he was always a popular choice because he was a great player at Camp McKinley and John Carroll, and his dad's been a legendary high school coach, and he's done such great things in the NFL. So he was brought in, and others were brought in. I mean, Robert Saleh, the defensive coordinator from San Francisco. But I really think DePodesta and his group, who had again risen into power within the Browns organization, they wanted to go back to Stefanski, and that's how it all came to be.
Jim, short week, tough to recover from injury. Now there's injury, and then there's, you know, some nicks and being hurt. Up front, offensive line, there's four guys. You know, Wills has the shin, Treader the knee, Conklin ankle finger, Hubbard with an ankle. So the front end on the offensive side, and then the back end on the defensive side. Mack Wilson looks like his is, you know, the knee is an issue. Jacob Phillips the same. Kevin Johnson liver, Grady Williams shoulder. I mean, how many hands will be on deck? Is the injury factor a big concern in this short week?
You know, and a lot of those, some of those came from training camp, and they just have not been able to get on the field. So Grady Williams, Mack Wilson, and Dave, the one that really torpedoed a lot of things that the Browns were excited about defensively was the second-round pick, the safety out of LSU, Grant Delpit,
Went
down with the ruptured Achilles tendon, and he's not going to be able to play.
Sure.
And believe me, that was a devastating day
at
training camp. Now, as far as this one's concerned, I think Wills is going to play at left tackle. He did practice in the little practice that they've been able to accomplish in this short week. I'm kind of thinking Conklin's going to play. I think that they're going to treat this like they treated Treader, who had a knee procedure at the beginning of camp. He really didn't do anything until the week before the Ravens game, and then he finally did play in the Ravens game. And I kind of think Conklin is along those lines, that I think he's going to play. So that would have the original starting offensive line, and Treader will play. That will have them in place. As far as defensively, Mack Wilson's out until October. They've lost David Njoku now to a knee injury, and they've lost their other rookie linebacker, and he's not going to play, I don't believe, and that's Jacob Phillips. He's also out of LSU. So it's a combination. Greedy Williams is not ready. He hasn't practiced since he went down in training camp. So really, the combination of training camp and now a short week, you know, has them kind of leaning on the depth factor, that next man up credo, and sure, it's getting thin, I think.
Couple more questions for Browns radio voice Jim Donovan. A couple of years ago, Jim, we saw Baker Mayfield at his absolute best since he's been in the NFL. He was brilliant in both games against the Bengals, threw four touchdown passes in one, had a passer rating over 140 in one of those games. Then last year, five interceptions in the two games, didn't play very well. Is there a particular thing that the coaching staff or the front office says when they evaluate Baker Mayfield's play, the number one thing that he has to do better?
Well, the thing that really sold him, maybe two things, Dan, that sold him on to them was leadership and great accuracy. And they love the accuracy, and he was very accurate at Oklahoma. And to be honest with you, he was very accurate in that rookie year. That fell apart last year. There were 21 interceptions last year, and it really got into become a real problem. And there were two things that really fell apart. Number one, they felt his mechanics fell apart. Number two was that they're worried, and I think there is more concern this year, is he comfortable, can he see in the pocket? And it was a problem last Sunday in Baltimore because you had Calais Campbell, and he's like 6'8", and he was swatting down passes, and they had other guys who were getting their arms up. And I remember last year, Carlos Dunlap gets his arms up, and he's batting down balls. So I think the plan, Dan, was this year in this offense that Kevin Stefanski brings to the table was to move him around a little bit more, give him some throwing lanes, give him some visibility. And, we didn't see it as much as I thought we were going to see it on Sunday. You do see it in practice that they love the bootleg. They're rolling him out. He looks better doing that. He's in better physical shape coming into this season than he was last year. But the thing that really has them concerned is the combination of a loss of accuracy because he was high, close to 70% in college. He was below, he was in the low 50s last year. He didn't have a good day Sunday. So that accuracy is a problem. And is it a physical problem that he's short and can he see down the field from the pocket?
You know, to basically accentuate that, I got a Dan Hoard nugget. Dan always has nuggets for us that are great during the breakfast.
What do you got?
We need a nugget.
But this one, in the first drive against Baltimore, they batted two balls. On the second batted ball, it was intercepted. And how about this? First drives in three of the last five games ended with an interception. Now, not in the Bengals. The last four games of last season and the opener this year, three of those five games, first drives, ended in Baker Mayfield interceptions. Now, against the Bengals, it was a Damian Ratley, 46-yard touchdown pass
in the
first drive.
That's right, yeah.
But Bengals win the game 33-23. But, yeah, he seems to be not trusting what he's seeing. I mean, there's places for him to go with the football, it looks like, and he doesn't want to just rip it. He doesn't want to cut it loose. It looks like he doesn't really trust it. Real quick about the defense. Myles Garrett, obviously, stud, great player. I'm telling you, though, looking at the game, B.J. Goodson, man, tackling machine. Adrian Claiborne looks good. Jordan Elliott, the rookie, looks good. There's some depth in that D-line, depth in that front seven, isn't there?
Yeah, and you know who played well on Sunday, and he had a – he had kind of an up-and-down year last year, but, I think he really came to play Sunday, and hopefully it will extend this year, is Larry Ogunjobi.
Yep.
Good player, Sheldon Richardson. You're right. I think up front, Dave, they're fine. I think they're worried about the youth at linebacker, even when Mack Wilson comes back. He's, you know, it's only his second year out of Alabama. The other kid, Sione Takitaki, you know, didn't play much last year because he was injured through most of the beginning of the season. And I think they're really worried about that secondary, especially that safety spot. They've committed right now to two guys that are on one-year deals, Sendejo and Carl Joseph. I mean, the real hope was that Grant Delpit was going to really be a thumper and a great player back there and a guy that would be kind of that hybrid safety that would be able to do a lot of things for them, both deep and up at the line of scrimmage. But I think up front, you're right, there's a lot of talent up there. And you know, playing the way they want to play, I think that, you know, they're going to lean on those guys a great deal to help out the youth and maybe inexperience behind them.
Our radio coverage on Thursday night will start with a pregame show at 7 o'clock on the Bengals Radio Network. And then on Friday, we'll recap the game on the Bengals Pep Rally Show from 3 to 6 on ESPN 1530. That's going to do it for this episode of the Bengals Booth Podcast, brought to you by Prime Sport, the official hospitality partner of the Cincinnati Bengals. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe, and if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thank you for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.